better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast. Busch Light Apple, the newest beer in the Busch family.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
When I turn on the Morning Rush, I want to hear Ty at his best every single day.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorback.
Ty, fortunately, has saved the world and not yet procreated.
This is the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast.
So there's a lot of negativity in the world going on right now, whether you see it on social media, whether you're watching it on TV, talking with friends, talking with family. There hasn't been a lot of positives that you could speak to these last couple months. And we're going to try and put some sports positives in your brain early on a Tuesday morning, whether it's Hunter Yurecek talking about the positives, success of U Sports here in Arkansas, whether it's Notre Dame not having a single positive test of the 103 football players that they tested this past week, July 15th. They're just some positives, but it seems like they're going to getting overwhelmed right now by the negatives that we have in society, mostly due to the coronavirus and everyone's outlook on what's going on right now, which it's hard to overlook that sometimes based on when the negativity outweighs the positivity. But we're going to do our best to get things going on the other side this morning, glass half full rather than glass half empty. This is the Morning Rush. He's Tommy Kraft. I'm Ty Richardson. 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in. We are always streaming live on hitthatline.com. Find our video stream, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. If you have a smart speaker, just say play ESPN Arkansas. We're also on the TuneIn app as well. Tom Murphy, usual slot, 7:15 this morning. We're going to have former Arkansas quarterback, former host of the Morning Rush, Tyler Wilson, join us at 8 o'clock. Excited to talk to Tyler. He was just on vacation, not this past week, but I think the week before. So we'll talk about that as well as a few other things. So positivity, we need it. We need a lot of it right now, especially heading the season. The outlook looks bleak. I know Hunter Yurecek asked, Bob Holt asked him about the prospect of playing college football this year, and he said his optimism was mediocre is how he described it. But hopefully we'll get some positivity leading up to this morning, Tommy.
Well, we need positive news, and we need some things that give us good indicators. We don't need false hope. So, and I don't think that's what we're getting ready to do, but I do think there's some things out there that maybe could be derived as false hope. And there are a difference in some of those things. But I think there's some headlines and some things that go underreported because it doesn't fit people's narratives or agendas. I think you're spot on. I think some of the news that is out there and some of the indicators that officials are watching, the hospitalizations, the death counts, some of the positivity rates in certain places headed in the right directions are all things that are positive indicators about where you might want to be able to forecast where we're headed about the time you want to play football.
Let's start with what Hunter Yurecek said on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday. And I know that we were speaking to the level of sports, the youth sports that are going on and happening right now in Arkansas. And he thinks that's a positive moving forward, especially as we trend closer and closer to fall sports this upcoming season.
Call me crazy, but there are a lot of positive stories out there, are there not?
There are a number of positive stories, and the professional leagues are just the start of that. I was talking to Coach Musselman before I jumped on this call with you, and we're talking about the number of AAU basketball games that he watches on his computer over the weekend and how those games are going on. I've got colleagues whose sons and their daughters are playing travel volleyball or softball or baseball or youth sports, and we talk about sending these kids back to school. Many of these kids that we're talking about sending to school are out playing sports. There's not testing going on. They're not wearing masks. There's not extensive protocols like we have here in the Southeastern Conference, and I think those are all positive stories that may be overlooked. You've got the professionals that are starting back. You've got youth sports that have been going for several weeks now, and I think we've got to figure out a way how college fits in there as well.
And that's important, obviously, because we've mentioned how important Razorback football is to the entire athletic budget. And that's just one little piece. Arkansas football is important to the integrity of this entire state, not only financially, but just for everyone's well-being. I know everyone is looking forward to college football this season. Some people are more optimistic that it's going to happen. Some people are less optimistic. But I think Hunter laid out some good points as far as the youth sport goes, as far as pro sports kicking off. Baseball kicking off this week. We'll have basketball starting next week. Professional basketball in the NBA. You have other sports that have already started. And so it's important to look and see the positives that we're doing. I don't know if you guys, and we'll get to the stat coming up, but not a single person tested positive in the NBA bubble this week as far as the players concerned.
No,
I think it's over 300. Number. That's the list.
I'm going to get all these numbers confused.
346 is what it is. So
I had the Notre Dame number in front of me, too. Yeah, but yeah.
So that's important. And the Notre Dame news that I think is positive is the 103 players that were tested on July 15th for Notre Dame all tested negative, which is very important. Now, I know many of you want to go to South Bend or want to watch that game, and I know that there's a little in doubt if that's going to happen or not, but at least there's a somewhat of a positive when you get that press release from the Notre Dame's athletic department yesterday concerning the players on that football
team. Notre Dame has done 356 COVID-19 tests to staff members, players. The total number of tests they've done within their athletic department, 356. They've had two positives. I mean, the idea that we're going to have zero, I mean, what the NBA pulled off, and they're the ones living in a true bubble environment. You know, you're in and you stay in, you quarantine. They got real strict protocols. That seems to be working really well. They've got a well-defined short regular season, eight games, and they're going to start the playoffs. They're trying to finish their season. We'll see how that works. I mean, that's kind of the ultimate way of going about it. 2 out of 356 is a great number. The idea, though, that we're going to get to zero in all of these leagues, that's not going to happen. We have to have expectations that there are going to be positive tests, and then how you're going to go about dealing with it when a player on a team, an active team, tests positive at a place like Arkansas or any other place, because it's going to be a reality. And that's the thing they're still working through, and we didn't got to a live season yet. So far, these are all positive stories. I mean, Hunter talks about the youth sports. I have watched from afar Legion baseball being played for well over a month now. Haven't heard of any issues. These are outside sports. We talk about, and hear the governor talk about, when you're outside, it's much easier or much more difficult for the virus to spread, and that, you know, you can socially distance easier. We're seeing these outside sports not having any problems that are being reported. I'm seeing youth basketball. I'm seeing videos of parents videoing their kids with youth basketball games all over the region at various tournaments. So there are youth events, you know, that he's talking about going on in various age groups. So sports lives are going on to some degree on smaller scales. How do you scale this up to a higher level?
And that's the big issue, because what, youth baseball teams have about 15 to 20 kids, if that?
Probably closer to 20, yeah.
What does Arkansas football have? Over 100?
Right. I mean,
okay. And you mentioned the scale up, and yeah, that's the important. There was I'm forgetting who was arguing with me on this on the text line yesterday, but he was trying to explain to me that UFC had the same amount of numbers than a college football game, which is just irrational. Like, saying that the amount of people at a UFC event compared to college football is not even close.
Are you talking about crowd?
Yes.
Well, crowd's a number you can control.
No. So, like, the people there, the cameramen, the amount of fighters stuff. Yeah. And that's idiotic.
But hey, all of that's controllable. The number of participants, here's the thing we don't know. We haven't seen really much like football, right? I mean, UFC's kind of close, but it's one-on-one. It's mano a mano. We haven't seen anything like football, because basketball, baseball, those are far less contact sports. That's the thing that's still the unknown, is what happens when you start playing the ultimate contact sport of football, and does that create further spread? That's what we don't know.
And the amount of people. That's
right.
What I'm referring to.
You have 22 on the field.
Well, not just on the field, but you also have the ones on the sideline, the amount of people there. It's more than any other sport that we've done to this point.
But it scales from the 22 on the field to more sideline, to more officials. There's more of everything in football.
Correct.
Because it comes back to more participants.
Which is why people are still skeptical of this working, because if there are more people, there's more opportunities for someone to have it, not know it, spread it, whatever the case may be.
But I like the idea that you're playing it outdoors versus indoors. I think that's a positive.
Hasn't that been debunked already, though? Really? Summer's, I mean, I feel
I'm
like
not
that's
talking about the heat, I'm just talking about ventilation, talking about airflow.
That makes sense.
You're listening to the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast. It's like the sound of refreshment meets the taste of the orchard.
Everybody staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
The reason I wanted to bring this up is because Barton Simmons, who's the 24/7 Sports Director of Recruiting, ranked Arkansas's quarterback room as the 25th best in the country. He labeled, he talked about Felipe Franks, talked about Malik Hornsby, KJ Jefferson, John Stephen Jones, also Jack Lindsey in there as well. Here's what he said about Felipe Franks. Franks isn't perfect as a quarterback, but he's very talented and played in some big games. More importantly for Arkansas is that beyond Franks, Jefferson has shown a lot of promise. Jones can get you in by a pinch, and Hornsby has a chance to be the national name in college football if he hits things right. If you go back to the Mississippi State game last year when KJ Jefferson comes in, really provides a spark, a couple big-time plays, whether it was trucking a Mississippi State defender, whether it was throwing that deep sideline throw, looked like a fade route to Treylon Burks, and then also plunging into the end zone, you saw a glimpse of what the future could look like at Arkansas if given the right coaching, if the right talent, the right offensive line is around him. And then with Malik Hornsby, this is a guy that has raced up the 24/7 quarterback rankings and overall rankings. He was a guy that ended up being in the top 100. Whether it's Barton Simmons, whether it was a number of different people over at 24/7, Steve Wilfong and others, they really like how he continued to get better and what he presented to the high school table. But the reason I think this is important is because if you want to talk about true dual threat quarterbacks, I think the last one Arkansas had is Matt Jones. Is that the last time where you, I mean, Ty Story had some wheels a couple years back, but Tyler, I think he's faster than people gave him credit for. We're going to talk with Tyler coming up here at the 8 o'clock hour, but like in terms
he wasn't a runner.
Yeah. And like true dual threat quarterback.
Mallett certainly wasn't. Cole Kelly was the worst as far as being able to run.
Yeah, Louisiana Steamboat, that seemed know. Like it would take him 10 minutes to heat up.
Yeah.
To me, I would say Matt Jones is
he was the closest thing you had to dual threat.
And you've had Quinn Grovey, you've had Joe Ferguson, you've had others, but I'm talking about the latest one, which is Matt Jones.
Willing runners at quarterback.
Yeah, and I'm curious because I've mentioned it before. I know that some of you think Felipe Franks is going to be fine, 100% healthy and stuff, and from all indications, he is to that point. But I'm still skeptical of the mental aspect of his game, getting back in an SEC-quality game, coming off the dislocated ankle against Kentucky last year, the broken ankle, where it was as gruesome, as painful as I've seen an injury when it comes, especially to a quarterback. So I'm curious how much of a willing runner he's going to be. But you look at KJ Jefferson, you look at Malik Hornsby, you look at some other guys that you can hope to get in the next couple seasons. Ken O'Brien has had a lot of success when he's had a dual threat guy. Look no further than De'Arik Keene at Houston. The numbers he was able to put up, over 50 total touchdowns when he was quarterbacking over there. De'Arik Keene gives Ken O'Brien a lot of credit for his success. So I think it's important moving forward whether that Arkansas has a dual threat guy that is not just an okay thrower, but can throw it and can run it. Because if you look at the SEC, Arkansas is always going to have issues facing superior talent on the defensive end, whether it's defensive linemen, whether it's linebackers, and whether it's secondary. They have speed all over the field. Alabama, LSU, Auburn, A&M, and others. There is so much talent on that side of the football. So you got to have a guy that can make some plays. Felipe Franks has shown the ability, not consistently, to do that in the past, but you hope to see that in the future of both KJ Jefferson and Malik Hornsby as well.
Real quick, best three quarterbacks last 15 years in the SEC, go.
Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel, Cam Newton.
Same exact three I was going to tell you. What all three were...
And that was not planned, by the way.
No, I mean, exactly. And that's the exact three names I was looking for.
What can they all do?
And they could all run the football. Now some could throw. Obviously, Tebow wasn't the best passer of the. He would be the worst passer of those three, right?
Correct.
But Cam would be a better passer than Johnny Manziel. Who's the better passer in your opinion of those two?
I'd have to look at
Johnny's the better runner because he was just more shifty and could cut back on angles.
And they did in different ways. Like,
yeah.
Tim ran for over 20 touchdowns. I can't remember how many Cam ran for. I would say that Cam was probably the superior passer. Johnny was in the middle ground. Tim was less. Tim was just really good at those power runs, like those they used to call them gators when he just run up the middle. But, I mean, I get the point you're insinuating.
But
what could
the
they
point
all
is
do?
All three were dual threat.
Exactly.
They both made the defenses, and they made the defensive coordinators every week pull their hair out having to defend both, whether it was run or whether it was throw, and they were good enough at both to get first downs. So your point is valid. I mean, now, you know, if you have a Tim Tebow or a Johnny Manziel or a Cam Newton, you're probably going to win some football games.
Correct.
And we're not sitting here suggesting Felipe Franks or Malik Hornsby or KJ Jefferson's going to fit in that category, but you're looking for someone that can check some of those same boxes. And the idea is you make your opponent respect both. And the problem is Arkansas has not had a quarterback since Matt Jones that really could make the defenses respect the quarterback's ability at Arkansas to really do both.
And when you look at Tyler, Ryan, Brandon, and Austin, those are the four really good, like great to really good quarterbacks.
Arkansas's best of the last 15.
Yeah, of the last 40. And Ryan, he beat you with his arm. He scared defenses so much because when he wound up, you knew there was a chance that you were going to get beat for 50 yards. Tyler was the same way. B.A. did it a little differently, had the arm, had some wheels on him as well, but again, it wasn't one of those aspects where it was like, man, I'm really scared about the elusiveness of Brandon Allen, even though occasionally he would surprise you with the wheels he has, and with Austin as well. Austin just didn't get any help from his offensive line, but when you look at those guys, you were more worried about their arm. It wasn't really the leg. Every once in a while, their legs would beat you. Not really Ryan's, but Tyler's, Austin's, and Brandon's. But you, as an opposing defense and as an Arkansas fan, you should be excited about the prospect of opposing defenses, opposing defensive coordinators, having to game plan not only for the passing ability, but the running ability of your future quarterbacks, whether it's Felipe Franks this year, whether it's KJ Jefferson and Malik Hornsby in years to come, and whoever else they bring on campus. It's almost, I mean, it's really difficult to not have a dual threat quarterback and win football games. Now, if you look at the SEC champions the last couple years and just kind of the success, like Joe Burrow, as elite he was as a passer, he also scared the daylights out of opposing defensive coordinators when he ran the football. And I know there's Alabama quarterbacks here and there, whether it's A.J. McCarron, whether it's Coker, whether it was, I guess, Hurts. Tua was more of a passer, but he could scare you as running as well. Didn't do it as much when he got injured. But those are, like, those are specific examples. Like, Alabama's kind of the anomaly when it comes to this conversation. Typically, when an SEC team wins the conference and it's not Alabama, they usually have a dual threat guy. That's usually, that's the commonality. Florida, you mentioned Tim Tebow, Texas A&M, with Johnny Manziel, Cam Newton at Auburn, Nick Marshall at Auburn. I mean, there's others that you can point to. I know that Jake Fromm's kind of also the anomalies there, but if you look over the course since Alabama started winning these SEC championships since 2009, the common theme when a team besides Alabama wins the SEC championship is a talented dual threat quarterback.
And if you're not going to be a guy that can be a real threat to run, you better be like deadly accurate throwing. That's what I think about when we had talking about Tyler. He wasn't a guy that was, now he was good enough to get a first down when needed running the football, but he wasn't going to be a guy that was going to beat you at the goal line very often running the football. But what was he going to do when he threw the football? It was going to be on the mark. Now, he had some great wide receivers that knew where to be and how to catch it. You know, so he had some great guys to work with. But Tyler could throw it, and he could throw it in a bucket.
Spin it, yeah.
He could put it in a shoebox. And that was, you know, that's the key to all of this. If you're not going to be able to run it, you better be able to make up for it with one of two things, if not both. And that's down the field threat, which is what Mallett was great at. He had great arm strength. And as you said, you knew he could crank it and maybe beat you for 50 at any given moment. Or you be able to, you know, thread a needle. And that's what Tyler was so good at, was just putting it, you know, on a dime. So,
and just for the Kendall Briles offense, the veer and shoot, what he's employed over the years, you would love to have that dual threat quarterback. I think one of the reasons that Chad Morris's offense wasn't as successful here in the SEC is because Ty Story, Ben Hicks, Nick Starkel, and who's the other, and Cole Kelly weren't necessarily just scaring the bejeez out of defenses when it came to running the football. To have, for Chad Morris's offense to be really successful, now you can have success in the American Athletic when there's lesser defenses that you're playing every single week. Or if you remember, I know Taj Boyd was more of an elite passer, but he could also run the football as well. Now, he had guys like Sammy Watkins, DeAndre Hopkins, and just some other absolute studs that played, Martavis Bryant, that played on that football team. So it was a little easier. But typically, dual threat quarterbacks are the thorn in every defensive coordinator's side because you have to have an extra man to spy or you can't fully rush. You got to contain. It just hurts the identity of certain defensive and certain defensive philosophies when you have a guy that can make plays with his legs, i.e. Johnny Manziel winning in Tuscaloosa his redshirt freshman year, which you just don't do as a quarterback, as an opposing quarterback. And then taking Alabama to the brink the following year in College Station, where he put up, I think they lost 49-42, and he did all he could on the offensive side of the football. Talented dual threat quarterbacks even get the better of Saban sometimes, even get the better of Kirby Smart, Kevin Steele, and some of the elite defensive coordinators in this conference. That's why it's important that Arkansas can continue to recruit, develop, and put on the field those guys that can make plays not only with their legs, but their arm as well.
And then go a step further with that. Then you start adding in wrinkles like the RPO, which I'm not sure how much of that is truly a wrinkle anymore, but a guy that can pull that off and sell it. Hey, he's a threat to really run the ball, gets out to that end, reads it, pulls it out. And now you got the threats with guys like Burks, guys like Woods, guys like Knox, that you can throw it and get them on that quick slant or get, you know, where you're going to pull out and you are going to throw the football after reading the end. Now you've got something. Now you got something to pick you up that tough third down play, that long second down and 8 or 9 type play. So I think it's very interesting what they could maybe do if the true running threat from the quarterback is there that defenses have to respect. Maybe what could develop off of that with some of the RPO game. I'm more interested to see what veer and shoot really can mean and what can be the variations off of that.
Well, with Felipe Franks, the identity of the veer and shoot, you pound it and then you also take some shots. You want to have a really good running attack and you also take some shots. Well, Felipe Franks has the arm streak, the accuracy, the decision-making sometimes is a question mark, but you're really excited about the potential, what he can do in Kendall Briles' offense. And you think about the RPO. The whole point of an RPO, the run-pass option, is the running back's a threat, the quarterback's a threat to throw the football, and also a threat to run the football. So there's multiple wrinkles out of that one little sequence, out of that one little set. And that's why it's important to have an elusive running quarterback that can provide you that third wrinkle. Not just two of the three, but all three. And Arkansas really hasn't had that, which I would have thought, like if Chad Morris had a more of a dual threat quarterback and who was accurate and stuff, I think his offense would have worked better. Now, I don't know to what extent, but I think they would have been more successful in Fayetteville if he had that guy. And I think and there were bright spots to the Ty story, not so much Co Kelly. You saw a few from Ben Hicks and Nick Starkle, but there just wasn't enough, and you felt like this offense could have taken another step if it had that particular guy, but it didn't seem like he was on campus. Then you saw what KJ Jefferson did in that little spot against Mississippi State, a little bit against LSU, not as much because obviously the Tigers, number one team in the country last year in Death Valley. You don't expect a true freshman to have a spectacular game in his first start down there, but I'm just curious to see if it's KJ Jefferson, if it's Malik Hornsby of the future, if Felipe Franks can start that trend where Arkansas has that guy holding the offense accountable and really doing great things from the jump at the start of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see how this battle turns out. And, I mean, we're all assuming Franks is the guy because he has the SEC experience. Can KJ Jefferson or Hornsby, can either one of these guys be a push? How close is the gap? You know, we talk about this really being a one-man race at this point. I hope it's not. I mean, truly, we need to see a real competition here because we hope the gap is far more narrow than what it's being presented as in the public opinion, which honestly, at the end of the day, means nothing, means squat. So we hope that when actual football is getting practiced and not agility drills are going on and a football gets introduced here in a few days, that the coaches are seeing some stuff that, you know, yeah, Franks is good, but these other guys are a lot closer to being the starter than all of us are yammering on about. That's what we need to see in this deal. That's what we're hoping the coaches are talking about when they come to the microphones.
Let me play devil's advocate for you. Arkansas's had that the past 2 years, and the quarterback room has been terrible. No one was a solidified starter. No one did that. So I would actually disagree with you and say I hope Felipe Franks comes in when he starts throwing the football on Friday and is the clear, defined starter. Now, I get the aspect of you don't want Malik Hornsby and KJ Jefferson so far down that it looks like the future in the quarterback room is up for grabs. Yeah. But here's why. I want there to be a just consensus amongst the team, amongst the coaches, amongst the fans. This is our guy, because you didn't have that. It was Cole Kelly. It was Ty Story. It was Ben Hicks. It was Nick Starkle. It was John Stephen Jones. It was Jack Lindsey. It was KJ Jefferson. It was an endless cycle of quarterbacks that you kept going back to. That's why I think it's important for Felipe to establish himself early. And I get what you're saying, that you want those guys to like push in the idea that they need to be good and they need to be further along than you think you're going to be. But in my opinion, Felipe needs to come in, be the guy from day one, and never relinquish that role.
There's a difference in competition for the position and paralysis by the coaches in making a decision. How much of that was going on the last year or two, where the coaches just couldn't make a decision? Indecisiveness during camp and during all, that they didn't know which way to go. They didn't know which way was up in making the decision on who needed to lead their team. I think you've also elevated the launching pad. I think you're starting off in such a better spot talent-wise with your quarterbacks. But I think there's a lot of it just, you had a guy in charge that was indecisive. You had an offensive coordinator that was in over his head. And I think you're in just such a better position coaching and talent-wise. You're going to see decisiveness about the starting quarterback role, but better competition from the talent standpoint.
Well, to give Chad Morris credit, he couldn't really be decisive when no quarterback stood out. Like, if you watch
that's why,
those,
that's why I'm saying you got better talent, too. So,
and, I mean, the idea of that, listen, I hope you're right. But we've said that the past 2 years, and it hasn't come true at all. We thought we had better. Past year, because there wasn't. We knew there was going to be a drop off from Austin Allen to Cole Kelly and Ty Story. We said that last year. We got on the radio, and listen, this isn't just you; it's me too. We got on the radio and told you there's more talent. It's Nick Starkle and Ben Hicks. Ben Hicks played in this offense. Nick Starkle's an SEC guy, and it didn't happen at all. So I hope
fair.
You're right. But in reality, us TV people, writers, other radio hosts said the exact same thing at this point last year, and it was an abysmal disaster at the quarterback position.
We're hoping a starter at Florida is better than a guy that was at A&M that didn't got beat out for the job. A guy that lost the job basically due to injury. Because do you think Franks would have lost the job at Florida if he hadn't been injured in that Kentucky game? Think Trask would have eventually just overwhelmed him in practice?
I don't know.
Probably
well,
not.
Say
because,
this, you could say the same thing about Nick Starkle and Kellen Mond.
But probably not, because we know the backup doesn't usually get enough opportunities during the midst of a season to have that opportunity. That's generally not how it works.
Because the timeline on Starkle started, I think it was the UCLA game, got injured. Maybe I'm off on that. Or was out for the majority of the season, came back in, and threw these record performance against Wake Forest, then lost the job when Jimbo Fisher came in. So there's I think that timeline's correct. But there's something in the back of my head. I hope you're right. But the past year, I know there's a new coaching staff, new OC and stuff, but we were talking about positivity at the beginning of the show. Let me be pessimistic here for a sec. I hope we're correct when we're saying the quarterback is going to be vastly better than it was. Because if it's not, you're in for another. I know you're probably not going to play 12 games this year, but you're in for a 1-9/0-10 SEC season.
Please tell me we can agree at least the coaching of the quarterback position. There's no argument that that's vastly better, right? Please tell me we're not going to disagree on that.
I hope so, and I think so. But, Tommy, I'll bring this up, and I can't stress this enough. Ken O'Brien has never done this in the SEC. You always talk about how the SEC is vastly superior than any other conference. This guy has yet to set foot in this conference coaching football.
But he's done it at the Power 5 level, at least.
But you always talk about the Big Ten. Their defense is horrendous. I'm just – listen, and Chad Morris did the exact same thing. So he's a Clemson Power 5 level. I'm comparing
more to Joe Craddock than I was to.
But who was running that offense?
Well, who was coaching the quarterbacks? So,
Chad Moore, are you saying Chad Moore didn't have a hand in coaching the quarterbacks?
Well, I mean, the head coach has got a hand in coaching everything, right?
But the majority of the time was probably spent with the offensive unit and coaching quarterback. I would just, I wasn't at practice, and the various times we did it and stuff. I'm just saying, listen, I agree with you in that, but I'm coming at more of a devil's advocate, pessimistic view this morning. This idea that I think that's correct. I hope that's correct, but we have to go back and we have to hark on. This guy has not coached in the SEC.
That's fair.
Period.
And that's not fair. That's accurate.
Sam Pittman has. So you're at least excited about the prospect of your head coach. Now, while he hasn't been a head coach in this conference or this division, he has at least been
here. He's been through a lot of scrapes
and a lot some time.
And your offensive line coach has, and your wide receiver coach has for 2 years.
Yes.
Going into
But your OC has not.
Right.
Now, your DC has, which is why I think... Now, I know
defensive line coach. You got a lot of your staff that's been through these.
We can argue that I think we agree that the offense is going to be the better than the defense this year. Now, the long haul, we'll see how long Briles and Odin end up staying here. I think there's a debate, depending on how long they stay here, that the defense could actually be better than the offense based on relative to where it was. But that should scare you a little bit. That all we kept bickering and moaning and complaining, there's another word I want to use right now, but I'm not going to use my swear word this just yet. All we kept doing is like, oh, this guy didn't coach in the SEC. This guy wasn't able. This is why he couldn't do it. Well, that same argument could be presented with Kendall Briles that he hasn't done it. He's had great success. Number one scoring offense in the country in 2015. His, I think, first year as OC at Baylor, if I remember that correctly. I mean, Bryce Petty had unbelievable numbers. That team probably should have gone to the college football playoff. Got screwed because the Big 12 didn't give them that opportunity because they declared TCU and Baylor co-Big 12 champions. But we can't overlook that, period. Because all we did was say the exact same thing about Chad Morris, and we can't just suddenly flip the script when a new guy comes in and completely overlook and be oblivious to that exact same aspect.
No, that's fair. And things didn't go great at Florida State. That's obviously why there was a change there.
They had improvement, but it wasn't what people thought it was going to be. And there was so much turmoil with Willie Taggart and what was going on down there in Tallahassee that he was in a no-win situation. But if you look, whether it's FAU, whether it's whether it's Houston, whether it's Baylor, whether it's others, he's had a track record of offensive success. His dad, as great of a coach he was at the high school level, took that philosophy to Houston, took that philosophy to Baylor, and Kendall obviously picked up on a lot of that. Again, still hadn't done in this conference. I hope you're right, because I think we're in agreement on that.
I think we're in agreement, though, that you're in a better position on the offensive side of the ball right now than you were 365 days ago.
It's okay for us to say that preseason, but we'll see what happens this upcoming season, what actually happens, because we can be all happy-go-lucky, this season's going to be better for Denton. If you go 1-9 or 0-10, then you're just like, all right, we're back to square one.
Well, I mean, there are so many unknowns. There are so many variables. There are so many things about this season that you can't even answer right now. So, I mean, this season, we just hope we get to see enough of this season to have an opinion at this point. So that's just where I'm at. So it's just hard to sit here right now and worry about some of the finer points and the details of how we're going to score quarterback play when you're just hoping to have eight games.
That's true.
At this point. That's kind of where I'm at. I'll worry about the minutia somewhere else down the line.
On a rope.
Oh, my goodness.
Joe Adams.
There's not a backup in the country that can throw a ball like that.
Wilson will keep it. Nobody expected that.
Wilson to the end zone. Touchdown. Jarius Wright. Wright on the money.
Tyler Wilson going for the home run. Wilson. Touchdown.
Tyler Wilson as we come back to live action. Francis Clark. Touchdown.
This is former Arkansas quarterback Tyler Wilson, and you're listening to the Morning Rush.
Welcome into hour number three of the Morning Rush. Going to the phone lines and welcoming in our buddy, Tyler Wilson, former Arkansas Razorback, former Greenwood quarterback here into the program. Tyler, you and I were texting yesterday, and I was listening to the Hog Pod, and I had a little PTSD because they were playing Greenwood highlights back in 2007, and unfortunately, for the listeners that don't know, you and your Greenwood Bulldogs kicked my Little Rock Christian Warriors' butts in that state championship game, so really kind of brought me back to that moment. But good to have you on this morning, man. Thanks for making some time for us.
Well, I appreciate you having me. I know it's been a crazy 3.5-4 months here. I don't know what the heck you guys have been talking about, but I commend you for trying to battle through the crazy times and still talk sports and whatever else there is to talk about out there. But you know, it's hopefully we get through this and have a season and we can enjoy talking a little bit of football.
Tyler, you were on vacation about a week or so ago. Where'd you go, man? Did you do a little fishing? Well, kind of what went on down there?
I think I've been on vacation for the last 2 or 3 months. But it's interesting because I did get down and went to Florida for a couple of days, and that was nice. But it's a hotbed for the virus down there, so I got out of there quick and came back home. And there's been a couple lake weekends. I've enjoyed being out at the lake a little bit this summer, and then trying to get some business done in the meantime as much as you can with everybody kind of being out and remote and a lot of the unorthodox natures of business now. So,
yeah.
But Florida was great and got out on a boat, caught a few fish and played a couple rounds of golf while I was down there. So always good to be in a 30A area.
Have you figured out what Zoom is yet? Figured out how to use that?
Technology is amazing how it's bridged the gap between, you know, all of the business facets, but Zoom and all these online where you can basically virtually be involved within any facet of the business is fantastic. And it's the new normal.
Yeah. Have you thought or tried to imagine what it'd be like to be up there right now as one of the athletes and be in the situation with new coach and going new coordinators and going through this process right now with so many uncertainties, not even, first of all, knowing whether the season's going to go off as planned or how many games you're going to get to play. Have you tried to imagine yourself in this situation and what it'd be like?
You know, I have. I've almost thought about it more as a coach. How would I try to train athletes or how would I handle all the things that need to be handled in terms of keeping that team together while you're under all of these restrictions that are a challenge, and especially, you know, for some of the younger guys that are trying to learn the system and get installed and become familiar with everything. You know, it's a challenging time, and I think there will be programs that come out on the positive side of this. Some programs, just like anything, adapt a little bit better than the next, and some staffs will embrace the changes just a little bit better than the next. And, you know, it'll be really interesting to see, who has benefited from, you know, being and communicating, with this that others maybe haven't. So,
Sorry, Tyler, go ahead.
No, I just said I think it'll be interesting.
Talking with Tyler Wilson here on the Morning Rush. So, Tyler, kind of to Tommy's question, if you were on campus, if you were playing right now, we've seen some people come out and say that college football players shouldn't play this season, but the majority of student athletes, whether on campus at Arkansas or across the country, they want to play their fall sport. What would your mindset be heading into this season with everything going on with the coronavirus right now and how you would approach it and if you'd want to play?
Well, it is, you're battling a lot of political jargon and I guess frustration from a lot of different aspects of this too. There's opinions from a lot of different people and something that you have to be very, very aware of and respectful of in the current climate landscape of what we're in. And, you know, I wish that I could tell you that, I had some of the answers and knew whether it was going to exist or not, but no one knows and everybody's got a different opinion on it. And I never, a couple years ago, when I was on the show day to day, you know, what I voiced was that, you know, it was Missouri a few years ago that there were some players that, you know, kind of stepped aside and said, we're not going to play. We're going to be advocates for a cause. And I on the show talked about how powerful the players and how strong one really, it could be an offensive line room. It could be a, a wide receiver room. It could be a quarterback room, or just a few players on a team that with their voice say we're not playing, and how much that would disrupt the entire football season just on one team, because now you've got one team that's basically irrelevant. And I think we stand and look at a time where you fast forward from some of those comments and some of where we were just a couple of years ago and where we're at now, and you're going, oh my gosh, now we see how devastating, you know, a stand could be from any individual in college football, and not, you know, more importantly, any team that takes a stand. So whether that's the virus or any other reasons for not taking the field on Saturday, I think you're seeing, you know, really where the power of college football plays.
Tyler, you bring up having a voice, and I remember when I first started in this industry, I had to tell my dad, whether it was on social media, whether it was whatever, that there's going to be people that don't like my opinions, attack me personally, whatever. The guy that the former face of the football program is a guy that still has a relevant voice when it comes to talking college football or just in the state of Arkansas. How frustrating is it when someone misconstrues what you said or misquotes you or doesn't give the full context of what you're saying about a particular topic?
Well, I guess I sent you a text yesterday, and that probably ignites a little bit of that question. But if you're referring to the hog pod, which I did with Bo Mattingly a couple days ago, and thought, you know, Bo does a tremendous job, and his staff do a great job of, I think, telling stories about past players and athletes that hit home and are nice pieces for the fan base to listen to. And, you know, I felt like Bo did a fantastic job with that. And as I listened back to it, I think it was well represented. However, you know, there's other, you know, and you only have an hour on there, and I think he condensed it to what he could do with it. But, you know, I've got a whole other aspect of my life that I've moved well beyond what you listen to in the podcast and what happened in 2012. That's a little blurb in my life that has been, you know, an education. But that's not what I live on a day-to-day basis. And sometimes I wish that maybe some other things were discussed beyond that maybe give a little more accurate representation as of my today life. And following that pod, I know there's not a lot going on in sports right now, and so I did get a few articles that came out that I felt were completely unfair and unrealistic as to the reaction to some of the things that I divulged on that were clearly not representations of what happened.
So, Tyler, let's talk about what you're doing now, doing commercial real estate back in my hometown city of Little Rock. Kind of, I don't know if I've ever heard this story and how you got started on that. I know as a visible guy in this state, it's probably a little easier pathway for you than others. But, man, how did you get started on real estate of all things?
Well, and I guess it's partly my fault because I do keep kind of a quiet under the radar presence as to what I discuss and what I'm involved in there. And so part of that's probably my own doing, but I've been in real estate for 5 years and I'm absolutely loving and enjoying what I do, even in the challenging times that we're going through right now. I joined a group in Little Rock in 2016 and we've done a significant amount of things in regard to being involved with the development side of our state, which is great, whether that's a project that we just completed, Northwest Arkansas, that actually have worked together with the Razorback Foundation and took a property there on the old Clarion Inn that was kind of a focal piece when you come into town. It's the entrance to the city, and we're able to turn that into a beautiful hospital. And there's projects like that I enjoy working on every single day and being a part of, and looking for opportunities to enhance and create for our state. And it's been fantastic.
What is it about that particular kind of work, as your life matures and evolves, what is it that drives you and inspires you? What is it when you get involved in a project that fires you up still?
Well, I think the creativity to it. You know, what's fantastic about business is there's a lot of similarities. There's a scoreboard in a lot of ways, like sports. Yeah. And you know, that's a way to keep those juices flowing. And it's a competitive industry, and there's always a challenge, whether that's, you know, construction prices yesterday that come in 20% higher than you think they are, and where can we save, where can we cut costs, and can we keep the project afloat? And it's working all hours of the night. It's yelling, it's screaming, it's kicking, there's always a boogeyman around every corner, and so you've just gotta continue to grind. And there's always there's risk involved in everything that I've been involved in, and that risk is exciting. And there's a potential reward, and so you know all of those things I think are exciting because you know, you're not just beating the clock every day, and you don't just have one task. You've got a whole lot of things you're juggling, and that's exciting to me, and fun, and chaotic sometimes. But you know, it has so many similarities to sports.
Yeah, life would be pretty boring if you didn't have something that kept you up at night, wouldn't it?
That's right. If I didn't have something that didn't give me gray hairs, then I'm probably not doing what I want to do. Yeah, so.
How much of you, I know you're still a student of the game, and me and you have talked about this many times on and off the air, you know, you still like to study football. How much have you looked at what Kendall Briles likes to do? What do you think this offense is going to be about when it actually has a chance to get on the field, to breathe and mature someday?
You know, I've always been a huge fan of what Kendall Briles has been able to do, especially, you know, with what he and his dad did at Baylor and what they were able to create football-wise. And with that offensive philosophy and scheme, he's no doubt a value in the quarterback room and drawing up plays. I mean, he's one of the good ones at it, and it's not far from what I like is an offensive, you know, philosophy. I've always been an advocate for that wide open game that puts the ball in the quarterback's hands and gives us an opportunity to score points. And he'll certainly do that. And so it, from that perspective, I don't think Chad Morris ever got to do what he really wanted to do. And he really never showed signs of what we all hoped that we would even see as an offensive philosophy. It was like it was stuck in neutral. I'm hopeful that we can see some electric stuff from Kendall Briles and what quarterback he chooses and where they go, whether that's Franks or whether that's Jackson. I mean, I think there's Jefferson. I think there's KJ's a unbelievable talent that's got the frame, but you've got some bodies and some guys up there that are absolute athletes. And I'm excited to see what one of those guys looks like in that system.
When the fans hear the term or the phrase veer and shoot, when you hear that, what should fans think? What should they visualize? What does that mean to you?
One more time on that.
Veer and shoot. We've heard Kendall describe the offense or his offensive philosophy as veer and shoot. What does that mean when you hear that phrase? How do you describe what the offense will look like under a veer and shoot philosophy?
Well, I think he's describing, you know, kind of a lot of the shotgun and misdirection, old school philosophies of like, you know, the triple option game, along with throwing the ball down the football field and being creative. And I know that sounds in a lot of ways kind of similar to what Chad was talking about, but, you know, it definitely gives a quarterback that has an athletic base, an advantage when you're running that offense. And you go back to thinking about some of the quarterbacks that Kendall has brought along and what they were doing at Baylor with Robert Griffin. And I mean, that's, you're like, wow, that would be a lot of fun, right? If you could plug that body and that frame and that mind into what you're doing, that would be pretty phenomenal. So I think that's what he's saying. In a lot of ways, it's not much different than what Chad was trying to do, maybe a little bit. But I think you'll see that up pace. You'll see that quickness and the quarterback and shotgun primarily, really using some of the athletic ability that they have at the quarterback position.
Talking with Tyler Wilson here on the Morning Rush. Tyler, Tommy and I were debating earlier kind of the decisiveness of the quarterback. If the QB starting position is locked up or if there's a push from Malik Hornsby or KJ Jefferson. I know you pushed Ryan back in the day and then you eventually assumed the starting role and had it in 2011, 2012. Man, from your perspective, how do you balance the offensive coordinator looking at the quarterbacks when there's one guy that you would really like rather to take over, but you also want the guys behind him to push him as much as they can, kind of like you did with Ryan back in the day?
Yeah, you know, the culture of the quarterback room is interesting. I think that there's kind of two schools of thought, and you'd love for all the guys in there to get along, but you know, I look at some of the greatest quarterback duos of all time. Let's go back to Joe Montana and Steve Young with Bill Walsh. Those guys didn't exactly like each other. and they went back and forth. And, you know, if you hear Steve Young talk about Joe Montana and Joe Montana talk about Steve Young, they're cordial and I think they respect each other, but yet, at the time, Bill Walsh used those guys as ammunition against each other to create competition. You know, you go back to Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you know, there's a great example of two competitors that are in a room that just they to this day, you know, they kind of have a little bit of whatever it is against each other. Not again, they respect the heck out of each other, but yet there's that competitive aspect, and there's no question that, you know, Brett Favre being there helped create a little bit of Aaron Rodgers. But there's also, you know, on the flip side of that, there's a little bit of Steve Young creating Joe Montana and vice versa. So, and Joe Montana creating a little bit of Steve Young. Yeah. So, that mentality that exists in the quarterback room, I think is absolutely important, not only for the development and evolution of the starter, but also the creation of what you're going to have to replace them when he's gone.
You still got an itch to coach? What would the situation, what would it have to be like? I know you enjoy doing real estate.
We had your buddy Broderick Green on, and he told us that he felt like he just felt like he had to get back. And I know y'all were friends.
A lot of former Razorbacks have gotten into coaching at a lot of levels this offseason. What would the ideal, what would the perfect situation have to be to lure you into coaching?
I don't know. You know, I think I enjoy being around a locker room. I enjoy being around kids and I enjoy, you know, or even just people my age or younger. I deal in arena in real estate where I primarily deal with a much older population of people, you know. And that's, you think about who owns real estate. It's not a 25 to 35 year old. And so, you know, it does make you appreciate those times where you're around that vibrance and that youth and that excitement and all of those things that you don't get in my current world. But on the flip side to that is I understand that business as well. And the recruiting aspect of that and having to babysit in some ways. And then you go coach football in addition to all that. And, you know, what you're seeing right now in college football is revolutionary. I think players are now going to get paid, on their likeness. And I think that's a really interesting facet to see, maybe who monetizes on the value of the athlete by trying to represent them. Mm-hmm. So I think you'll see components of that start to pop up, you know, and how these organizations and each of the schools handle all of that and juggle all of that with their athletes. But you know, there's a lot of different directions that interest me, coaching being one of them, just because it's in the blood and the DNA. I don't see myself doing that anytime soon. Other than maybe mentoring a kid or two that I feel like has some potential and enjoy being around them and talking through stuff. But I do think you're seeing a revolutionary change in athletics, especially at the college level, that will make coaching in the long term a really difficult profession.
Tyler Wilson, former Razorback quarterback, former host of the Morning Rush. Always appreciate, Tyler, when you give us some time of yours, because I know it's precious. And, look forward to talking to you again soon.
Well, thank you, guys. And you guys enjoy the rest of the afternoon. And go get them.
You're listening to the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast. New light lager made with natural apple flavors, available now for a limited time.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
All right, Dingens, you've done a really good job with these, so keep them going. What are we starting out with today?
Well, who would you rather have under center to start for the Razorbacks, and you're like in a fantasy world? Would you rather have Tyler Wilson or Ryan Mallett? Who would you rather have under center? If it's your team and you're the head coach, who do you want under center?
Man, that's like choosing between kids. That's a tough one there. I'm going to go with Tyler.
Both offer you something different.
He's not listening. You don't have to say
something. I just think he had the ability to get you in the right play. I think a little more accurate. Probably didn't have the deep threat. Maybe a little better running the football at times. I'm going to go with Tyler. You know,
I consider Tyler a friend. I like Tyler a lot. I think there's a reason Ryan beat him out 2 years, right? I think he's a slightly better quarterback. Now, I think it's closer than a lot of people think, and I think Tyler is a tremendous quarterback. We saw early on, as you heard from the Auburn highlight, what he was able to do on the road in his first crucial start in that atmosphere in Jordan-Air Stadium, what he was able to do. But I would give the slightest of edges to Ryan in that argument. But I either way, You
don't have a good quarterback.
Yeah, either way, you're going to have a great quarterback, I think you'd rather have either of those guys over Felipe. All due respect to Felipe Franks, you'd still rather have Ryan or Tyler back there quarterbacking this year.
Would you rather run out of the tunnel to a sold-out Razorback Stadium or a sold-out Bud Walton Arena?
Oh.
Bud, it's not close for me.
The best venue, I think every kid's dream that grows up playing in this state is running through the A, though. And they're saying that's one of the things I was thinking about the other day. No band, they're not going to run through the A this year. I mean, they're not going to run through the A out onto the field. Can you? I mean, think about that for a minute. So, I think I'd want to run through the A.
But what did you start with? What's the best?
The best venue is. But we're talking about traditions. Now, what would I rather have? If I can change the question, would I rather be in the starting lineup and have John George announce my name and the light show and all that at Bud Walton? That wasn't the question. Or run through the A? I might rather have John George announce my name and the light show and all that stuff. But he just said run out the tunnel. So,
Baum is no slouch when it comes to venues across the Razorback campus, but Bud Walton is the best athletic venue that Arkansas has to offer. You're not going to get any disagreements from you.
When they're at its best, Bud Walton is the best home court, home field edge the University of Arkansas has to offer.
And to me, I would say it's not close, but Baum is such an intimidating venue for opposing baseball teams, so I think it's closer than people think. But Bud Walton's the best thing you got, so I'm going to Bud every
You're a basketball guy, but
Sunday.
I agree with you. I think Bud Walton, when it's full and it's loud, it's just you can't beat it.
Yeah.
So.
Would you rather hit a walk-off home run to send the Hogs to the College World Series or hit a game-winning three-pointer to send the Hogs to the Sweet 16?
College World Series.
Sweet 16.
College World Series.
So why College World Series? I guess it's the better question would be Final Four to that. But
I mean, you look at where, I mean, and it wasn't even the College World Series at the time. It sent him to the Super Regional, but Brady Toups still lives. I mean, I just need to say Brady Toups, and you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? And that didn't even put him into the College World Series. That didn't mm-hmm. even, that just put him into a game to give him a chance to get to a Super Regional. And so I think if you hit a walk-off home run that puts you into the College World Series in a fashion like Brady, I just know how that name has lived and how famous that name is. And I just say Brady Toups, and you know exactly what I mean right now.
Yeah, and I think the Grand Slam definitely helps lift that allure. I would argue that based on where the basketball program is in its current state, that you would get more appreciation from the majority of Razorback fans if you sent the Razorbacks to the Sweet 16, somewhere you haven't been since 1996. So that's just my – but I understand your line of reasoning as well.
You've talked a little bit about quarterbacks today, so would you take everything to account right now? So you've talked a lot about Felipe Franks being inconsistent or not showing a lot of consistency. Who would you rather start game one this season, Felipe Franks or KJ Jefferson?
It's Franks.
Not Franks. Yeah. I mean, he's just more experienced at this level.
He's going to be. Now, I hope KJ gets to the potential that we saw slight bit during the Mississippi State game last year, but there's a lot more examples, a lot more games, a lot more moments that you can point to that Felipe has come up big that KJ just doesn't have the experience mm-hmm. to even measure up with.
Yep.
Let's see here. Would you rather have a laser-accurate pro-style quarterback or a dual-threat quarterback?
Dual-threat. We just spent a good chunk of the segment how important that is to compete in the SEC. Tommy asked me, and listen, this was not a planned question. Tommy asked me straight up, who are the best three quarterbacks the last 15 years? Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel, Cam Newton in the SEC. Easy answer. Three of those guys are dual threat.
As long as you can throw it well enough, they don't bring 11 players in the box.
It's not.
You know, as long as the safety's not touching the butt of the nose guard.
You don't want a Georgia Tech, an Air Force, or a Navy quarterback. You want a guy that can actually spin it and be accurate. Now, I'm not talking about the precision that maybe a Joe Burrow-esque where he threw, 76-78% completion percentage.
Right.
But you still expect for a guy to complete 60-something percent of his passes along with being mobile with his legs as well.
I want to qualify that with I don't need Joe Burrow, but you do need someone that can at least keep them from putting 8+ in the box.
Correct. So. Yes.
You brought up the three dual threat quarterbacks, so who would you rather have under center game one for you? Tebow, Johnny Football, or Cam Newton?
Johnny Football was maybe the most exciting of those three. I mean, you held your breath every time the ball was snapped. I'd have a hard time not. It wouldn't be Tebow, even though he was third amongst those three. As exciting as he was the least complete of those three because of his inability to pass the ball. Cam, when he took off with the ball, he was the best runner of those three, even though Manziel was the most shifty. He just had the biggest frame. He was going to run over people. He got it by bruising people. I think I'd go with Manziel just because he was most exciting. When he got the ball, he could reverse field. He could find lanes. He could find angles that no one else could find. Anything was possible with the ball in his hands.
When you think about Johnny Manziel and Texas A&M, they did not have a defense to help him out, especially in that 11-2 season. I know they held Alabama to 24 points in the game in Tuscaloosa, but the majority of the time, Johnny was having to shoulder the load. Now, I know that Auburn in 2010, their defense wasn't just exactly spectacular, but Cam still got some help. You look to Tim Tebow, one of the things that's overlooked with Florida back in those days when they won the national championship, they had guys like Brandon Spikes, Joe Hayden, Ahmad Black, studs all over that defense. So, to me, it's hard for me to gloss over Johnny Manziel based on what I just said, but I'd have to go with Cam Newton. Cam Newton had one of the best single seasons like Joe Burrow in the history of college football.
Who would you rather place the blame on for the Razorback football woes? From switching from Coke to Pepsi in 2012 or when Ty enrolled at the University of Arkansas? So I'll say this tongue-in-cheek.
It started before.
Since 2012, Razorbacks have been 37-89, and when Ty enrolled at Arkansas in 2013, they're 33-77. So who do you want to place the blame on?
Pepsi.
Pepsi or Ty?
Pepsi.
I'll just go with Ty. Yeah.
Good man. See here. Ty, would you rather give up your seat on the Morning Rush to guarantee a date with Madison or let one of your best friends score a date with Madison?
Like permanently on the Morning Rush?
Permanently.
See you, Tommy. See ya. I'll find
if the date goes well.
I'll find a radio job in Auburn, Alabama. See you later.
Assuming there's a second date.
Yeah, that's a good point. You gotta nail that first impression. Yeah.
Figured you would have thought about that more. Tommy, would you rather see...
You better get a haircut first. Yeah.
Would you rather see Ty score a date with a woman or do a week of shows with James Taylor?
What's more likely?
James Taylor? Probably.
Can you name one song?
No.
All right, real quick, we got two coming in here from the text line, being Clarksville. Coming up on Shark Week, would you rather face off with a shark in the water or face off with a bear in the woods?
Bear in the woods, you're dead.
Yeah,
you
have no chance with a shark in the water.
You're dead.
Real quick, JT in Hot Springs, Quinn Grovey or Matt Jones in the new offense?
Love to see them both, but I'd go Quinn.
Yeah, Quinn.
So that's a good question, though, from JT in Hot Springs. Good Would You Rather Tuesday. Dingin's good questions, as always.
Pick it up a little bit. Get your chin up. Smile!
This is the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast.